This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. My guest this week is Scott Wooldridge, a musician and songwriter based in Minneapolis. In addition to performing under his own name, he's also a member of the Wooldridge Brothers, a Milwaukee, Wisconsin-based band. He has appeared in projects and shows with many heavy hitters, including Mike Mills of REM. I love the Americana tunes he writes. They have intelligent, thoughtful, sometimes irreverent lyrics, and his music hits a sweet spot somewhere between rock and edgy folk. I'm thrilled that today you get to hear a couple of his songs. It's time to get to know him. Let's talk with Scott Wooldridge. Welcome, Scott, to Musician Talk.
Hi.
Hi, I'm so excited to have you on today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
In preparation for your big show, which we're going to talk about later. But before we do that, I want to just dig right in and talk to you about your musical journey and when you started singing and playing and writing, and just kind of take us through your musical life.
Okay.
All right.
Well, it goes way back to the 70s in Indiana, where I grew up. I think when I first started thinking about writing songs and singing too, I was probably in junior high maybe, and a girl at my high school did a project where she sang two of the songs she'd written, and she was a songwriter, and it just had never occurred to me that this is something that normal people do. You know,
I mean, right.
You know, I was enamored of the music I heard on the radio, and those were, you know, Elton John, Paul McCartney, people who lived in yellow submarines and flew in private jets, and they were stars, right?
There's got to be some magic,
right? So that's who wrote songs,
right?
And then to see one of my friends do it was just opened my eyes. It was sort of like, oh, well, maybe I could do this.
Cool.
And, you know, I was so into music that it was just really appealing to try it. Took me a long time to get very good at it. I think maybe in the next couple of years it'll happen. And then, you know, I kicked around with bands in high school. We've had jam sessions and had different lineups, and we decided to kind of get serious about it when I was a freshman in college, and I ended up doing 1 year in college and then kind of cutting back in college and doing the band thing. We ended up moving from Indiana to Milwaukee. Milwaukee is not known as, you know, a big music scene, but it actually was, you know, there was some stuff going on there, Violent Femmes and later the Bodines. And we kind of knew some people there. So that's where we ended up. And I spent 15 years there in Milwaukee with the band The Squares and then the Wooldridge Brothers. I think the Wooldridge Brothers formed in 91, and we've been really active. We've you know, played with a lot of people.
So the Wooldridge Brothers, how many brothers?
Just two.
Okay.
Myself and Brian. Brian plays lead guitar. He sometimes plays bass, but mostly lead guitar. Julie Strazewski Wooldridge, his wife, is the vocalist also.
Cool.
Jack Rice was on bass, has been on bass, and Scott Gorsuch was our drummer for quite a while. He's retired now. That was the main lineup of the band over the years. And we were most active mid 90s. And then we still get together and play. Lineups changed maybe a little bit from here and there, but still doing it.
Cool. So we'll talk a little bit more about the Wooldridge Brothers. I want to go back a little bit. And mm-hmm. when you thought about, oh, hey, I can write songs, were you already playing an instrument at that time?
I was a piano player. I took lessons.
Okay.
I was in band and choir, kind of a music geek. I eventually started learning to play guitar. I've always been kind of a very basic rhythm player.
Okay.
But I mostly perform now with acoustic guitar, yeah.
Okay. And so how long did you continue taking piano lessons? I mean, I just feel like your entree into other instruments is facilitated so much by learning the piano.
Right. Yeah. And I've heard that and I find it to be true. It certainly was a great foundation for me. I only took lessons 4 or 5 years. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a lot. Maybe that's not a lot. I don't know. But
it kind of gives you your foundation of theory and knowing scales and all that kind of stuff, which is so important for guitar playing, of course.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I was in high school, I felt like I had so much going on. And, you know, I ended up, you know, being a percussionist and taking lessons in percussion. So I kind of dropped the piano at some point and then was mostly doing this band and stuff. And then when we started the rock and roll thing, I played keyboards in the first couple versions of the band and then slowly switched to acoustic guitar.
Why did you do that?
I felt like the songs we were writing were more guitar oriented, I guess. And everybody else was writing songs on guitar. You know, it just seemed like I started getting into people like Dylan and, the folk scene a little bit, but especially Dylan. And to me, that was the ideal songwriter. Right. So I really wanted to kind of go down that path.
The ideal songwriter, and I think a lot of people feel that way about Bob Dylan. Why do you feel that way? Why do you think he's the ideal songwriter?
Well, I don't know that I feel that anymore. I mean, I certainly consider him one of the greatest.
Right.
But there are people like Joni Mitchell and, you know, the Beatles and everything that are also really important to me. Ray Charles is really important to me.
Right.
You know, going back to a keyboard player. You go through stages, and I was really into Dylan for a while. And just his story, you know, and some of it is more of a narrative than maybe factual. But, you know, the singer-songwriter who challenged the establishment and his songs are just so brilliant. I really just kind of fell in love with them and was really a huge Dylan fan for a long time. I still am.
Yeah. Do you write your songs on guitar now?
Yeah, like 90%.
Got it.
I wrote one of the songs, Waiting It Out, on the latest Wooldridge Brothers album, Starts at Dusk. Waiting It Out is the first track and a song that's, I think, pretty important to us. And I wrote that on piano, but most stuff is on guitar.
It's nice to be able to have that option to do.
Mm-hmm. It can really give you a different feel, you know, kind of a change of pace.
Yeah. And your background in taking piano lessons and picking up the guitar and then playing percussion for a while also sets you up so well for writing songs like you do. I love your songs. I feel like you're a cross between, well, I mean, I could pick out a dozen people, but what hit me first was Tom Petty, Dave Matthews, Beatles, and Dylan.
I've kind of gotten into Tom Petty a little bit more over the years. I was a fan when I was a kid and, right now, I cover a couple of his songs.
So in your songwriting process, you write it primarily, as you said, on guitar. What do you start with? How do you write songs? How do you approach songwriting?
I guess my process is usually I get a line in my head or an idea, a couple lines maybe. And I'll make a note of them. And when I sit down with the guitar, I'll start playing around with it. And then the song grows from there, usually pretty quickly. Some songs I've worked on over time and you know, try to polish them. But usually it comes together pretty quickly. In the last few years, I have this hobby of jogging, and I go out along the rivers here in Minnesota, the Minnesota River and the Mississippi River. And that kind of activity, I think, really spurs kind of a rhythmic feel of thinking, you know, so you start thinking in with kind of a beat to it.
Oh, I like that. That's really cool.
Yeah, so I've had a lot of ideas over the last 6 or 7 years, just when I was out jogging, and I'll just make a note on my phone and come back, and eventually they become songs.
So when you say a line comes into your head, is that usually a melody line or a lyric line?
Lyric. The melody probably is in the lyric line to some degree from the very beginning or very close to the beginning.
After you have kind of your chord progression and your lyrics and your melody, your songs have so much more than that. When do you start putting on the sauce and all the little extras, like the background harmonies and the oohs and the all the different things that are going on, the breaks and all that? Do you collaborate with people for that, or is that something that you do yourself?
There is collaboration there. So I think the Wooldridge Brothers put out 6 or 7 albums.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of that music, that's where the Wooldridge Brothers part comes in, because sure. Brian has a lot of that he contributes as far as kind of arranging and thinking about what to add, like you said, the sauce. Right. And so Brian does contribute a lot. The other band members contribute a lot. It ends up being richer, you know, with all that contribution from other people. When I write a song, I always sort of leave it open as to how it's going to develop.
Sure, because you might not necessarily have the lead guitar part or the drum part written out. And so you rely on the musicians that you work with to come up with the part.
Absolutely.
Yes? Yeah.
Yeah. And with Starts at Dusk, you know, we also worked with some producers. We produced some of it ourselves, but John Munson here in Minneapolis helped us with some production work. And we recorded it at Terrarium Studios here in Minneapolis. Yeah,
got it. And a producer often arranges the song that you're working on. That often is their role.
Yeah,
not always, but often.
Not always. No,
right. Not always.
With us, we have pretty. You know, by the time we got into the studio, we had a pretty clear idea of what we wanted to do. But for example, John suggested some things about how the bass line went and how the quiet parts went, and really contributed some good ideas.
That's great. It's time to introduce our first song called Drive Through Summer. And so I would like you to tell us a little bit about writing this song and where the idea for it came.
Well, this was actually the song I was thinking of John Munson having a big contribution, because he helped us kind of flesh this out. And, you know, it's a story song. It's me reminiscing about thinking back when I was younger, much younger, and sort of the Indiana experience of growing up and dating. When you're a kid and you make a lot of mistakes and you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
So that's sort of what Drive Through Summer is about.
I love the mix you have of storytelling with groove. It's unique, I think, and I really, really appreciate it. Why did you choose this song to play today?
People respond to it. I think people can relate to it. So I thought that would be a good one.
Awesome. And who's all playing on this track?
Well, again, Jack Rice on bass, Scott Gorsuch on drums, Brian on lead guitar, Julie on vocals, and myself on vocals. And I think I did the harmonica part. It was pretty basic.
So let's listen to the Wooldridge Brothers song, Drive Through Summer. Scott Wooldridge is part of that group, and he is my guest today. Here it is.
That was the summer she went to drive through at McDonald's, and I put on 15 pounds. Yeah, she must have been commissioned. She told me she'd get bored if I stopped coming around. Well, that polyester uniform, she made it look exotic. When she said the word supersize, it was almost erotic. Well, but it turned out she was just worried about her sister, so we ended up back on the fly. I never was ashamed to be the nice guy she could turn to. For Joe Strummer in that long, She said the Talking Heads had to be on drugs. Well, she was going south to college and I was going north to nowhere. The connection just came unplugged.
Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. You just heard Drive Through Summer, an original tune written by the Wooldridge Brothers, which my guest today, Scott Wooldridge, is a part of. So yeah, I just can't stop saying how much I love the song. I love the way it starts. I love how full it is, and yet it's not messy. You know, I mean, there's so much going on, but yet it just really, and it's so catchy, and it's perfectly matched for your voice, and it's got a great hook. So I mean, you kind of got it all.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I mean, I think people relate to it. Brian and Scott Gorsuch actually deserve a lot of credit because, you know, John helped us in the formation of it when we recorded it, laid down the basic tracks. But Brian and Scott Gorsuch really worked hard on kind of polishing it and mixing it, as you said. There's a lot of there are things going on, but I think it still sounds very cohesive. We recorded that. Oh, God, I think we recorded it in like 2014, the original tracks. And we kept working on that album for two or three years after that and released it in 2017. We have to work a little slower, or at least it turns out that way because I live here in Minneapolis. Brian lives in Milwaukee. Scott Gorsuch lived in Chicago. We were a three-city band, basically. Wow. And so that makes things a little more complicated.
Yeah, no kidding. So yeah. Did they come to town to put the basic tracks down, or was it all virtual sending files?
We had a few days here in Minneapolis where everyone came and recorded the basics. And then we would do overdubs in the other cities.
Okay. So I want to talk about this current project you have coming up here. And this is really fortuitous timing because it's coming up this week and it's called Big Star Number One.
It's a celebration of the 50th anniversary of the release of the debut album of Big Star, which is a band that's hugely influential, I think, in modern music, and was really underappreciated at the time. They had like one of these classic tragic kind of stories where the business side didn't promote the album and couldn't get its act together. And so their albums didn't sell very much at all when they were originally released. And the band kind of fell apart and there were, you know, it was the '70s. There were stories of drug issues. And I think the two main songwriters both had, you know, mental health issues. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It's something we all, you know, deal with. So they struggled after that, but Alex Chilton, the main songwriter, went on to have a pretty successful career and was lionized by Paul Westerberg and the Replacements in the song Alex Chilton. And I think that's really how a lot of people came to know Big Star, because the Replacements were very influential themselves.
Right.
And people were like, well, who's Alex Chilton? Who's Big Star? And right. they went out and found it. And I first heard them in the 80s. But I think really most people were introduced to them through the Replacements.
I had no idea who Big Star was. And I started reading about it and how influential, yeah. like you said, influential they were. Kind of like insider baseball for yeah. musicians, you know, the mm-hmm. people that like that kind of music know about this group and feel that they had a huge influence on them. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about this show. It sounds very exciting.
The first album was just an incredible album, incredible melodies, great songs, high energy. The first side, it's like a really rocking song followed by a really beautiful ballad. Pretty much the whole first side of the album. And I think of albums in size, so that shows you my age.
Right, they tell us, doesn't it?
So we're going to recreate the first album in its order for the first set of the show. Second set, we're going to do songs from other albums that they did. Radio City was their second album. And you can get into long, long arguments with musicians about which album was better, you know, Number One Record or Radio City. They were both classics. And then there's an album called Big Star's Third, which was mostly Alex Chilton and studio musicians or musicians that he worked with there in Memphis, which is very different, much lower key, kind of depressing in places. So they had three main albums, and Chris Bell, who died very young, did put out a solo album, and Alex went on to do a number of other projects, including solo albums, but we're going to concentrate on the first three albums and a couple of solo things in the second set, it'll be the later stuff.
And this isn't like the Wooldridge Brothers covering this. This is you bringing in a bunch of different musicians to play through the album.
Yeah, that's right. We have just a lot of different people. Chris Paracelli is going to play once or sing one song. Michael Ferrier, Nick Leet from High on Stress, Stephanie Paquin. She had a band called American Housewife, which I discovered in trying to put this together. I was looking for bands that covered Big Star or did Big Stars from this area. And I found out about Stephanie's band, and they were terrific, and they do a great cover of Oh My Soul. So she's going to be playing. Mo Rudd from that band is doing a lot of the guitar work. Tommy Bentz is playing guitar. Ben Glaris and Brian Just, two great songwriters here in town who have a very similar style to some of the Big Star stuff and are great fits for this. So Cindy Lawson. Is going to sing a couple songs and help out.
Wow.
So we got a lot of people involved. I'm counting around 20 musicians total.
Oh, that is just great. And this is going to be Friday, September 9th at 7 p.m. At Parkway Theater in Minneapolis.
That's right, on the south side here.
All right. And there's $18 advance tickets and $25 at the door. We'll say this again at the end. So if y'all are interested in going to that, we'll get to the info at the end. So I have a quote section every week, and I found this quote by a legendary songwriter, John Prine, just, you know, like genius. Americana genius in particular. In fact, as I read, he kind of popularized Americana. Maybe Dylan maybe created it somewhat, and then he kind of popularized it with his incredible songs that he wrote not only for himself, but many other people covered.
Right.
So the quote is, writing is about a blank piece of paper and leaving out what's not supposed to be there.
You know, it's one of those great quotes about songwriting. And I think, you know, to some degree, he's talking about less is more, you know, trying to focus. And when you write a song, really get to the essence of it. And his songs are a great example of that. They're not real wordy, and they're so memorable. You know, the lines are so memorable. What words are there really count.
Right.
So I love that quote. That's a great one. The other quote I love about songwriting is Bob Dylan's, where he said, a song is anything that can walk around by itself.
That's really cool.
I just think, you know, if a song is really good, it does have kind of a life or, an energy of its own.
And it has legs.
Yeah.
All right. So let's turn to your next song that we're going to play. It's called Some of the Damage. And yeah. Is this a song written by you or the Wooldridge Brothers?
I wrote this one. Brian really helped with, there were some chords in there that we kind of played around with. So that was, it was a bit of a collaboration, and getting the vocals down with Brian and Julie, and probably Gorsuch and Jack as well, contributed some to that. It was really, you know, like a lot of songs on that album, it was a group effort. But I wrote the bones of it, you know, the lyrics and the basic chords. And, you know, speaking of like stripping things down, this song is about grief. So I wanted to really not be too wordy or sentimental and really get to the essence of it, of what I was thinking of, you know, at the time.
And what were you thinking of at the time?
Well, I was thinking, of relationships that I've had, including some with some people who have passed away. And once that happens, you can't fix things, right? If there were ever a problem or something between you. So that song talks about that a little bit, but also about how you just go through life and, you know, you've got to accept that some things you do are going to be, you know, are going to be imperfect, you know, not perfect. You're going to make mistakes.
Right.
And you've got to live with that and use it, I think, to grow. So that's what this song is about. I also kind of picked this one because I think it's the most similar to Big Star in its sound, of the songs that we do.
It's different from the first one in particularly in the vocal line. It's beautifully sung. Your falsetto has incredible control. Really, really well done.
Thank you.
Really, seriously. You know, and the sentiment behind the song, the damage that we have, or the mistakes that we made, or the fake failures that we have, or however you look at that, the negative things that happen in our lives, that they also inform the good parts of us.
Yeah.
And understands other people's failures and shortcomings. And I just love that sentiment.
Yeah.
We can embrace those things, right?
Right. We're human, and that's part of the process of being human is figuring out, you know, how to move on and how to use the pain or whatever it is, you know, that you've experienced. And as you said, it really helps you understand others as well. It helps you to have empathy. And I don't know anything, any quality in humanity that's more important than empathy.
Ah, yes. Makes us better in every single part of our lives. Definitely. Right. Okay. So let's take a listen to Some of the Damage. This was written by Scott Wooldridge, my guest today. So let's take a listen to this right now.
Who we are,
This is Musician Talk, and I'm your host, Pauline Jennings. My guest today is Scott Wooldridge. You just heard him sing and play guitar on his original tune called Some of the Damage. Yeah, that falsetto is really incredible. And I love at the end, it kind of, you have some Beatlesque kind of harmony somehow, it sounds like. And bringing that in just fills it in and takes it out beautifully.
That's the big star influence for sure.
Wow. The in your range is pretty incredible there, Scott.
the thing that I've worked the hardest on is being a teacher, and it's, I think, the thing I enjoy the most about performing is, like, I'm pretty basic as an instrumentalist, and I just worked really hard on being a good singer, and I mostly it's self-taught. I just listened to people like Ray Charles and Sam Cooke and Dylan and others, John Prine, I mean, another great example. They can convey so much with just the way they sing and the way they phrase the words and stuff. And there's so much to learn just by singing along with artists like that.
I agree. There's some ineffable things that you cannot teach. You can only hear and learn through osmosis almost. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you really explain bending notes? I mean, you could say bend the note, but really, how do you do that? And it kind of takes listening to learn.
Absolutely.
I think, yeah, that's interesting. So I also have a part of this show called Best Gig, Worst Gig. Mm-hmm. So the worst gig we like to talk about because, you know, well, learning from our mistakes, but also when's enough time has passed, we can laugh about it. Yeah. So what comes to mind for you?
Well, I don't know that I can think of a single worst gig. I can recall a couple, and there might have been a lot more than a couple, where I got just super fixated on, like, a mistake or something that was unexpected, like, or the sound wasn't right. And you can get so caught up in that it just kind of blows the whole show for you because you're not focused on what you're doing. You're not relaxed.
Right.
You're not enjoying yourself. And you can't really put on a good show unless you're enjoying yourself and relaxed. And so I think there have been a few shows like that. And I think most of them, I hope, happened when I was younger and hadn't quite figured out, you know, some things about performing.
Well, I think that whole sound thing, it does take you out of the moment, out of the performance, if you can't hear well.
Yeah, you can't let it get to you. I mean, right. you have to have the muscle memory and the experience and the confidence to know that, you know, you're out there doing your best. What the audience hears isn't necessarily what you hear. The audience wants to be there in most cases. They want to be there. They're on your side. They're going to be forgiving of, like, little issues.
And I love the idea of having the experience to let that stuff go. And I think it does take experience to allow yourself to do that, because the only thing you're going to do by worrying about it and focusing on that is also going to be detrimental, just like the sound problem is to your performance. So why add insult to injury kind of thing?
It can really snowball. I mean, you know, one little problem, suddenly you're not focusing and you're making more mistakes and you end up, you know, feeling pretty crappy. So I, you know, try to, you know, roll with the changes, as another great song said.
I bet you have more than one great gig that you can recall.
I have a terrible memory, so I'm going to go with the last show, the most recent show we did with the Wooldridge Brothers. And it was really rewarding for me, and I think for Brian and Julie, because we hadn't performed in public in 3 years. You know, the pandemic and some health issues, and again, the distance between us geographically, just combined to just make it impossible to do shows. And we got an opportunity to open for Delamitri in Milwaukee. It was just kind of a fluke. And we'd worked with them many years ago. We had opened for them on their first tour. Oh, God, when was it? It was in the 80s. It might have been the 90s. Anyhow, we got a chance to open for Delamitri and when we were a pretty young band. And that was very much a thrill. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to come back and work with them again and see them again. Now, so many years later, was really wonderful. And being able to get up there and feel like we, you know, like we never left. It was really, it just came together well. And I think we were all very happy with the show.
Where was the show?
It was in Milwaukee. So, you know, we had a lot of friends there. We had a very supportive audience. It was a lot of good elements to that show.
Yeah. So, Scott, where can people find your play schedule and your music?
Well, I do have a website, www.scottwooldridge.com.
And that's Wooldridge.
That's correct.
Hit that D in there, right?
Tricky, yeah. I've seen it misspelled many, many times.
I bet.
I'm on Facebook. I try to be very good about announcing shows and promoting them. People might have to put up with some politics, too, if they see my Facebook page. But yeah, Facebook's one place, and the web page is another one.
And so you can get your music on your website. Are you also on streaming services?
Yes.
Okay. So just put in Scott Wooldridge on Spotify or...
Or the Wooldridge Brothers.
Wooldridge Brothers, right. Okay. Awesome. And again, I want to remind people of the Big Star number one record at 50 years old, that the show that Scott's helping to put on. Excuse me, are you producing this show?
Yeah, it was my idea. And I just, when I found out early this year that the number one record was going to be 50, I was just like, we got to do a show. We got to do a tribute show to it. I was fortunate to be part of the Big Star's third show at First Avenue, I think back in 2015. Some peers of Alex Chilton, after he passed away, started putting on shows that commemorated the Big Star's third, which is a very unique album, and they were able to do some really unique stuff with it. Mike Mills is in that, Chris Stamey, Ken Stringfellow from the Posies. There were a lot of relatively well-known musicians in that production, and we were fortunate, Brian and I, to take part in it. And so that was kind of the template, and I was sort of already, I've been doing tribute shows for Nick Lowe and Simon Garfunkel and Elvis Costello at a local place, the Driftwood Char Bar here in Minneapolis. And this was an opportunity to do it at a much bigger venue. So it's a much bigger production and much more challenging, but it's just been a ton of fun. It's been great.
And this is at the Parkway Theater in Minneapolis, and it's Friday, September 9th at 7 p.m. 8 p.m. The doors open at 7. Music starts at 8.
That's correct.
Well, this has been great to have you on the show. Thanks, Scott, so much. It's really been great to meet you.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. Many, many thanks to Scott for sharing his music and musical journey with us today. Thanks always to Wendy Nordquist and to you for listening to Musician Talk on the One, KYMN. You have a wonderful day.